Everybody, please welcome Sandra Dodd. And one more thing, after Sandra finishes, I will come back up and we will have Sandra pull the name out of. Yes,
I'm the little kid who gets to pull the ticket.
Yes. Flat Wren was supposed to do it last year, so we had to have Margie pretend to be Flat Wren. But we will pull the name out of the Albuquerque basket to see who wins the free family family registration for next year. Okay, go right ahead.
Hi, I'm going to talk really fast because we're so behind.
You're not that behind. We have until 3 o'clock.
Take your time. We don't have till 3 o'clock. Have you never packed a hotel room? And if they're packing it while I'm not there, it's going to have to happen again. Before I forget, Keith is sitting in the back. Keith is sitting, and then if I pack it, Keith will have to pack it. I know, I'm going to hear about that if I don't say that. Keith is sitting in the back, and he has books, and we need some cash. We spent all our cash, so please buy a couple of books so we can go to the grocery store before the picnic. Thank you. Every time one of the kids said, I want to get my picture done, or I'm thinking we're going to go to lunch, we give them a $20 bill. And everything they did, like, cost $20, I guess. they've been passing it back and forth. Yeah, I gave Kirby the other 12, and that's how bookkeeping works at our house. I also have things to give. I may say the names wrong. Lainey Carlson Lynn and Tori Kelly bid on the rocks that I brought, and they came in second and third. So I saved a rock for each of them, and I need to. So if you are they here? Yeah. Those people. Who's Lainey? Where's Tori? Well, maybe after. Please come get a rock that you can keep forever. Real old rock. Keith and I are thinking maybe 30,000-year-old rock out of our yard. Can you imagine? What an archaeological thing. Yeah. Geological thing. All right. I'm going to talk about unexpected benefits of unschooling. I had the idea when I first started. You know, when Kirby was little, I knew I wasn't going to do lessons. I knew it wasn't going to be like a curriculum. But I thought, you know, somewhere in there's probably going to be some group sports, and there'll probably be some, you know, homeschooling band or something, community chorus. Because that's what I thought. It still, even though I had this whole open classroom vision, I still thought you still have to hit all the stops at some point. And you're going to have this sort of, you know, the checklist will develop by itself, but still it'll have all those things on it. And he will have done some public speaking, which actually he now has. You know, but I had this idea of the checklist of things you ought to do, which is probably play soccer or football and play clarinet or piano. You know, I just thought it would happen, and other better things happened. I also figured, you know, he'll eventually have an idea of American history and have an idea of New Mexico history and of international Western civilization. And he does, but it doesn't look like mine or what I imagined. He didn't get it in such a way that he could say, oh, here's American history from colonization to the Revolution to World War II, like they do in school. He has all those parts in all scattery ways. And I don't think there's any of it that he would go, well, I didn't know that. But neither would he be able to recite it. The things that happened that I didn't expect were really weird, and I have to say this is not a full list. First of all, it's not a full list of everything that surprised me so far, and it's not going to be the final list because things are still going to surprise me. I'll bet you when I'm a grandmother and it surprises me that they did something or another, and I will credit it back to the way they grew up. And some of the things here I can't separate as definitely unschooling and not because of La Leche League or other parenting things. Because like Pam Sarushian said, so much time has passed, I don't distinguish anymore. I can't tell those apart anymore. It surprises me that my children have the ability to make eye contact with people. And not hostile contact, not the what, who are you, but the real, honest, calm, listening to them, looking at their faces, little kids and adults. They don't have a different way of being to be with younger people or older people. I didn't expect that. It surprises me that they have such a range of friends, of different, you know, people from different places and different kinds of people. That I didn't expect. I didn't expect them to learn so much without me. I thought I'd be there. And I've missed some stuff. I've missed some good stuff. But, you know, when I was teaching, I used to, like a vampire, love those moments when a kid lights up and learns something for the first time. And I would feel guilty sometimes, like I had stolen that moment from their parents. Like, oh, if I hadn't told them, their parents would have, and their parents would have seen them light up. But I don't know that the parents would have been the one either. It might have been some other teacher or some friend of theirs. You know, sometimes you learn about Roman history in the bathroom, you know. And I wanted to tell my kids Roman numerals one time, and I've told this story before, but I got so excited. Something came to the house, like something we had ordered or something came, and it had Roman numerals on it. And I thought, oh, this is neat. So I went and pulled a couple of math book and an encyclopedia or something that had little displays of Roman numerals. And I said, I want to show you guys something really cool. Come here. It was just going to be like a 1 minute look at this stuff, and I'm going to leave it on the table, and I'm going to go make breakfast. So I called them, and I said, this is really cool. You know what this is? And I had written down, you know, 1, 4, 5, and 6, and Marty just like, he's impatient. He wants to do something else. He sort of like gestured at the whole thing. He went, that's a 4 and that's a 6. I'm like, can I go now? And I said, I'm totally deflated. You know, I'm not having fun anymore. And I said, how'd you know that? And he said, Mega Man. Because the video games were named Mega Man 1, Mega Man 2 in Roman numerals. And nobody taught them. You know, they assumed if there's some symbol for 5, there must be some symbol for 10. Okay, done. I got to go. If life is all swirling, though, they will learn it. And you might miss some parts, just like if they were in school, but not just like they were in school, because they discover it themselves. And if you realize that they will discover things like that, once you've seen them discover 1 or 2 or 3 things, you don't worry about number 300 at all. The more things you've seen that they discover on their own, the less you will worry. And so sometimes I just say, you guys know about this. Yeah, right. One time we had a discussion about stages of history, you know, Stone Age, Iron Age and stuff at Super Salad, I think. And I don't remember why it came up. But I think, again, I'm going to have to summarize this before I make my point. No, they already knew because of playing Civilization, where your civilization develops through stages. I didn't expect Kirby and Marty to be offered jobs they had not even applied for. I never thought when Kirby was a little kid, well, I'll just do this. I'll keep him home. I'll jolly him up. He'll be charming, and people will say, do you want to come and work for me? But some of you with littler kids might consider that might be one of what was going to happen. And, you know, and it doesn't happen with everyone. And it has happened with some people who weren't unschoolers. But it wouldn't have happened to Kirby or Marty as it did in these situations if it hadn't been that they were out of school and available and new adults and had voluntarily and cheerfully helped adults with whom they first made eye contact. You know, all of that is part of it. They were trustworthy, friendly, honest, eye contact-making kind of guys. I didn't know that my relationship with Kirby, my relationship with Marty and with Holly could stay so good even when they were teenagers. I assumed that I could get along well with a 10 or 11-year-old and amuse him and, you know, entertain him. But I didn't know. It surprised me that... And one of the lines in the books, Dan Vilter read the book that I've written in the back, which Keith is selling for $15. Please buy one. How many times do I have to say that? In there somewhere, when my kids are little, I had written some article and I had said, you don't want to put your kids in an aging chamber. And that, they were little when I wrote that. And I said, maybe when they're about 14. And I was thinking of my half-brother 14 or me 14. And I didn't know that when my kids were 14 and past, that wouldn't apply to my kids. You know, because I just knew other 14-year-olds and my own 14-year-old self. So I didn't expect that I would still have a close eye contact-making relationship with 14-year-olds and 16-year-olds and a 19-year-old. The side benefits of all of that ability to get along are that I did a social maneuver when Kirby was 15. We had gone to visit the grandparents in Alamogordo. It's New Mexico, but New Mexico's a big place, and I need to warn you that the conference, which is going to be in New Mexico, don't think you can take the afternoon off and go to Carlsbad Caverns because you can't, okay? You can't even take the afternoon off and go to Santa Fe because the towns aren't conveniently located near each other. But we had gone to Alamogordo for something, and Kirby, at the age of 15, had voluntarily gone. And I said to the grandparents, just kind of in way of making conversation, I said, this may be the last time we come down here as a family. And I thought it'd be kind of cool if Grandma said, yeah, oh, yeah, I understand, which she did. She said, yeah, after Jerry was 15, he never went with us, or after Keith was 15, we didn't ever take him anywhere, you know, whatever. You know, she agreed that that's how it is with kids that age. And I told Kirby when we got back in the car, you are off the hook for life, bud. And yet, when the next time we went, Kirby wanted to go. And the last time we went, Kirby wanted to go. So just like the option to go to school or not, how much better it is when you choose to stay home. He didn't have to go to grandma's, and yet he went. Ha ha. And the whole tone is better. It's like, we didn't drag a 16-year-old boy to grandma's. We didn't have to. And it really, if he had wanted to stay home, it really would have been okay. We could have taken a smaller car. It would have been cheaper. You know, nobody would have been bummed at him. It would have really been okay. I didn't know that they would be so compassionate. I didn't realize that just not forcing a kid to go to school would make them uber understanding of other little kids having to go to school. They're really sympathetic when they see other kids unhappy. If they see a kid in the store and the mom has said, no, I said no. Last night at the museum, at Fantasyland Museum there, Fantasyland of Certain Death, there was this one little kid, and his dad had just said, I said, get right here right now. And the people around him, you know, the unschoolers around him just kind of like deflated. Ooh. But I think if it had been in Albuquerque and it had been Holly or Marty, they would have said, why don't you just let him play? Yeah, because Holly's good about just saying to somebody, well, just be nice to him. And nobody did last night because it would have kind of spoiled the fun, but for the rest of them. But really, they noticed that. And when I was a little kid, I just like blocked it out. If somebody else is getting a spanking, I'm gonna keep on moving because I'll be next anyway. You know, I mean, it was inevitable that kids were gonna get yelled at and spanked in the world I grew up in. And in their world, it's not inevitable. It's kind of offensive. It's shocking. I didn't know that. I didn't expect that. Gail Higgins wrote one time, and I saved it. I've been thinking about some things along these same lines for several days. I'm noticing all the unexpected bonuses that came along with our unschooling lifestyle. As I became more aware of my kids' needs and responded to that, it just naturally carried over to my husband. Our relationship is so much stronger now, and part of it's just because I'm nicer now. I think I used to be so controlling of our lives that it affected us all in a negative way. I'm still working on it, but just the awareness of what I was doing has led to changes. This I saved from Gail Higgins and put it in boldface. There are very few times when our lives don't seem in harmony these days, and it's the best bonus I could ever have imagined. And I agree. I felt those same things. And nobody, when Kirby was 5, said, well, you'll really be happy because when he's 19, you're just going to have so much peace in your family and you and your husband will get along. You know, what? I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking, how's he going to learn multiplication tables? Jill P. wrote on unschooling.info, when I started unschooling and consequently mindful parenting, I didn't realize the effect it would have on my kids and awareness about how conventional parenting is disrespectful and downright nasty. How upset my kids would feel when they saw it, and their disbelief that most of society condones it. One night, Addie, 11, came home from her neighbor friend's house full of stories about how the parents treated the daughter, wondering how it could be like that and what she could do about it. While the girls were playing, the parents told the daughter to help them clean up branches and sticks in the backyard, so Addie chose to participate. I've seen my kids do that, too. When parents tell another kid, go do that, take the trash out, or whatever, they'll just go with them and do it. So the daughter wasn't being helpful enough, and the parents, after making comments about how helpful Addie was and the daughter wasn't, told the daughter she had to clean up the rest. Addie couldn't believe that parents would treat someone like that, and it was very sad for her to see the look of pain on her friend's face, so she helped clean up the rest of the yard and tried to comfort the girl. I've seen my kids do that. I didn't expect that. And then at dinner, the parents were grumpy with her and wouldn't let the little girl have any ice cream because she hadn't finished whatever green bean. And so Addie had ice cream and put hers back in the freezer, asked them to save it till the other girl could have some. You know, that kind of generosity in the dog-eat-dog world of my growing up wouldn't have happened. I would have just eaten my ice cream lest I lose it. You know, use it or lose it, ice cream. About 5 years ago, Holly, this is back to my own house. We had neighbors across we live in a cul-de-sac with 6 houses, and one family that had a little girl who was taken care of by her young uncle were house-sitting another family that has a pool. So Holly had gone over with the other neighbors. None of our houses are pool, but they're over at the pool. And the little girl wanted to get out and get her towel. And Holly was... Is Holly in here to give me dates and places? I think she was 8, probably 7 or 8. And Holly swam really well. That wasn't the worry. Nothing was wrong. The little girl's a year younger than Holly. But she just kept saying, I want to get out. I'm cold. I want to get out. And the uncle said, no, stay in. And so Holly said she kept thinking the girl would say the right thing and he would say, oh, no, I'm joking or whatever, get out. But he didn't want to stare in the water. So Holly said she just got out of the water, walked around, got the towel, and brought it back to the little girl. And that seemed brave to Holly. It seemed brave to me. You know, I thought that was a really brave thing to do. And I said that to Holly, and she said, what do you mean? So really, they don't have the fears and the overlay of what kids can and can't do. So for Holly to do that, I think she just thought, why won't this grown man get this poor little girl a towel? And Holly was not afraid of him telling her, get back in the water. You know, yeah, I'd like to see him try. But, you know, he didn't know that. And so I look at Holly and I think, how brave. But just like there are no basis for comparison comments, it wasn't brave. It was just how Holly is, and I didn't expect that. I'm impressed when they show that kind of courage. We were in the bathroom at the Rio Grande Zoo one day, and a mom had threatened to spank a little boy, and a store spanked him or something in the bathroom. I was in the stall. I missed it. Holly's standing outside. And she said to this woman who's spanking a pretty big kid, not a stroller baby, like he was 3 or 4, and she said, why don't you just be nice to him? And the woman, you know, turned around to this little girl who's not being hostile. She's making conversation, you know. And she said, well, he needs to do what I say. And Holly just, you know, gazed at her calmly, waiting for her to say something good. And the woman said, you know, when you have kids, you'll understand, kind of thing. You know, and it was just fascinating to me that Holly was holding her own with somebody who just hit another kid. You know, when my visceral reaction was, wait, she hits. Back up. I didn't expect to enjoy losing arguments. I did. Shh, be very quiet. I didn't expect that. I can keep talking. I can talk in the dark. I can play record in the dark. I didn't expect to enjoy losing arguments, but I do, because it's like a debate club kind of in our own home that can spark up at any moment. And if Kirby can, who's standing there, I just named him because he walked in. If Kirby can beat me in an argument, that's good for Kirby, isn't it? And Holly, a lot of times, Holly is Miss Logic. We'll be arguing with her about something, and she'll just pin us in an instant, anybody. But Kirby, I've just told this story lately, and that's why I thought of it, so some of you will go home and read that I just wrote it down, too. But Kirby made the greatest comeback one time when somebody, he had my car keys, the basket was about as far as from here to there, and I said, could you go put them in the basket? And he's like, can I just give them to you? And a grown friend of ours said to Kirby, in that sarcastic sort of way, said, would you like some cheese with that wine? I have to act this out. I need my lights. Find out who's messing with the lights and get them. I can't act out what Kirby did. Kirby was about 12. And Kirby like stands back and looks the guy. He looks the guy up and down like that. And he goes, would you be cutting it? And we just laugh. You know, he wins. You win. I will put the keys in the basket. Keith was bothered by it at first. He said, why do you let them argue with you? You know, I don't like it when they talk back. Yeah, he didn't say talk back. He said, I don't like it when they argue. They just shouldn't argue with you. And I said, but it's good for them. If they can win an argument with me, they can win arguments with a lot of people. And so he started kind of getting into it like that, too. And if we can't win an argument with a little kid, maybe our point isn't all that valid. Thank you. I didn't know I would be so accepting of them saying no. And not just, mom, do I have to? You know, not a formal appeal like my mom let me say, why can't I go? Are you sure I can't go? But they can just go, no, I don't, that doesn't sound fun. No, I don't want to go there. And now at first it was like, oh, they always say no. It's so much work to find a place to go to lunch, because some hate this place and others hate. You know, I don't want to go to Burger King. No, I'm not going to McDonald's. But now I kind of like it, because when they go, no, I don't want to do that, I just realize there's somebody who will say, no, I don't want to do that to, you know, sexual predators. No, I don't want to do that to bosses who are saying, you need to work this week, and even though you gave it to you off. They're going to be able to say, no, I don't want to do that in all kinds of healthy situations after I'm long gone. We have this shelf. Keith made a funky old shelf at our old house to hold it held records and tapes and a TV, and he built electricity into it. He put just like wall outlets. You know, it's plywood and painted brown, old hippie shelf. But it was kind of a corner shelf that we didn't put in the corner. Like, we built a corner of a room with this shelf kind of, and there were shelves on the outside to put videotapes. And then it was in my sewing room for a long time, but it's bulky and it's huge, and it needed to be out of there just a couple of months ago. And so I said, I think we cut the cords when we moved it here. I hadn't been using electricity for like 6 years, right? I said, I think we cut the cords. Let's just take it to the dump. And I felt bad because it took him a lot of work, but it took him a lot of work 25 years ago, right? He does nice woodwork now. He had some back there. And I said, well, let's put it in the backyard. He goes, it's junk, it's junk. So then we said, let's give it to Marty. So Marty had just rearranged his room. He has a big room. And we said, Marty, is there some place you could use this? Because I plugged it in and it worked. That was the deciding factor. Does it go to the dump or not? Is it live electricity? Yes, 6 outlets, not the dump. So we said, Marty, your TV would fit here and you could put a bunch of stuff on it. Do you want it? And he said, yes. And I'm like, cool. But not now, in a couple of weeks, because he was trying to get rid of another piece of furniture that was in his room. And I think my parents, I don't think, okay, I'm saying that to be polite. My parents wouldn't have let me say, yeah, in a couple of weeks. They would have said, now, right now, strip your room, put it in a minute, minute, minute. And we said, okay, so we found a place to put it in a couple of weeks. Marty took it happily, and now it's there. But I remember how I felt when he said, no, not now, in a couple of weeks. I was real calm. And I thought, okay. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect that it would make things so sweet between me and Keith. And part of that is just getting older and having more investment in the relationship. But when I consciously wanted to be more patient with little boys, I can't help but remember that Keith was a little boy and people weren't so patient with him, and that's all still in him. And I see friends of mine, and sometimes I have a lot of male friends for whatever. It'd take years of therapy, I guess, but I have a lot of male friends, and they tell me their feelings about when they were little, because that's how people are with me. They tell me their feelings. So they'll be telling me how they felt when something happened or something. And I see them change into that little 6-year-old, 10-year-old, whatever story they're telling me, boy. And sometimes the emotion is still there. I mean, I expect it with women that they can tell a story about the first time they were ever really embarrassed and they cry. I don't expect it with men because they're all tough. And then I think, poor guys. Poor all those men having spent all these years being tough and not telling those little boy stories and not letting people see that. But anyway, I know that Keith has in him memories he doesn't even want to disturb. And so sometimes when I see that he's jealous of Kirby or Marty, instead of going, oh, buck up, guy, you know, how old are you? Get over it. I think, oh, wait. No, that's 10-year-old Keith being irritated with 10-year-old Marty. He's mad because he didn't get to do that. Marty gets to do that. So I would instead, the best way for me to protect Marty at that point is to be nice to Keith. You know, it's okay. Wouldn't it be cool if we could have done that stuff when we were little? And then I reason with little Kirby, with little Sandra and little Keith. And that's helped the marriage a lot. And seeing that my kids can be really mature and really immature, and I don't like those words, I would like to qualify them, but that they can do something 1 minute that's very adult-oriented that most kids don't get to do because they're too little, and then do something that's real childlike that most people their age wouldn't do because their friends would razz them, knowing that that they do that and it's healthy and it's good, then I revel in the fact that Keith and I can do that too, and we always could, but we didn't tell everybody. You know, kind of kept that quiet. But it's okay to one moment be really responsible and really adult-like and then go, all right, then, let's get the Play-Doh out. And Keith is really a nice guy, and I do need to say that because he is really patient. And there's the nature and nurture thing, too. His parents have stayed together for a long time, 60 years or something. You know, they quit counting. And so I do think that there's some component of just being a certain way. You know, some geese never waver. They do the same thing every year. And my parents both eventually were divorced more than once. And I always had the feeling that if we got in a yelling fight, that meant we were going to get divorced, right? And Keith said, what are you talking about? So we had a different expectation about that. And Keith's luckily won out because he's just very steadfast, calm kind of guy. And that's been helpful. But the principles that applied to the kids applied to the adults, too. So if it was okay for kids to say, no, I don't want to do that, it's got to be okay for Keith to say that. If I'm all hot for him to go with me to some party or something, you know, I want him to skate for the grandparents, as it were. You know, come here and let me. And he goes, I don't want to do that. Before we had kids, I would have thought that was just uncooperative, you know, grounds for divorce. And now that we have kids who say no, and I can be calm about that, now it's like, okay, Keith doesn't want to do that. How old am I? I need to buck up and get over it, you know? And also, there's another genetic component, and that is that when the night Kirby was born, and I had come out, he was a cesarean, so I missed the first part. I had come out of recovery, and I'm seeing him for the very first time. He gave me the dirtiest look. And I turned to Keith and said, oh, Keith, I'm so sorry. Okay, I'd been with Keith for like 6 or 7 years, and once in a while I would just say to Keith, what? And he'd say, what? And I'd say, why are you giving me that dirty look? And he said, what dirty look? And by that point he is mad, and he is giving me a dirty look because I've just accused him of giving me a dirty look. It was just something about his face. Because I don't think Kirby was mad at me yet. And Marty's a lot like Keith. And so sometimes Marty will do something that's cute on Marty that irritated me on Keith, and then it dissolves down and it doesn't irritate me on Keith anymore the same kind of way. It's like, oh, that's just the way they are. I didn't expect unschooling to make going to the grocery store so fun. But it's been fun all kinds of ways over the years, different ways over the years. But recently they opened a new store really near our house, like as close to our house from here as my room upstairs. And we went to the grand opening. Holly and I went to the grand opening early in the morning, we thought, but we had just missed the ribbon cutting ceremony. They had a ribbon cutting ceremony, speeches, and live music. We missed it. Next time they open a grocery store by our house, we said, we're going earlier. And the whole store was full of free cake, regional managers shaking hands, giving people presents, and, you know, souvenirs and magnetic potato chip clips, and it was a party. And we stayed there for a long time. We took the camera. I took pictures of Holly in front of the tortillas, in front of the vegetables. I sent them to my friend in England, because in England the grocery stores aren't the same. They're cool, but they're not the same. And I don't think if Holly had needed to go to school that day, we would have taken her hour before school to go hang out at the grocery store. And I'm not sure if she had a homework project due and I was all cranky about all the things that parents can get cranky about, that I would have made up a little web page display of our day at the grocery store and sent it to England. And nobody looked at Holly and said, aren't you supposed to be in school? Because they were just, everybody was so happy to be there. And we went to the produce guy, the manager of that side of the store, and I said, the vegetables are beautiful. Whoever did that, you need to give him a raise. And he said it was about 6 guys. You know, he didn't say, oh, thanks, yeah. He knew it was a big deal. And he said there were about 6 guys. They started yesterday morning. And he said they were laying the little peppers in there one by one. They scattered them out and looked at the sizes and shapes. And they were laying, I said, nobody's going to buy any today. Nobody's going to want to mess that up. And I really think that's about unschooling. So we're there. And now we thought, oh, yeah, we should buy some stuff. So I'm trying to get Holly to get something for breakfast. You know, let's get something. Let's get something like pastries. You want to get this? You know, I'm for the sugar stuff, right? Because it's morning and it's a store. And she went hungry. We knew we were going to buy something. And of all the foods that were there in that store, even without disturbing the vegetables and fruits, she wanted a microwave pizza. They had pizza they made. They had, you know, everything. She said, no, I want microwavable pizza. So we went and looked, and she got like a Tombstone deep dish pizza. That was going to be her breakfast. And I'm trying to talk her into donuts still. But there are these 2 older women there, and I'm going, sweet rolls. And she said, no, I don't want anything sweet. I just want pizza. And the women looked at her and looked at me and, like, you know, looked at each other. It's almost like candid camera. It's like, and boom, boom, you know, what's the punchline? No, she didn't want anything sweet. I didn't expect to see school so differently. Holly had, for a few times, and I sometimes think just to irritate me, kept saying, I want to go to school next year. And she started doing that when she would have been in fourth grade, and that's okay, you know. And I'd say, okay, then you need to practice your handwriting. Here's what to expect if you want to go to school now. And I would say, you know, you're good on this, you'll pick that up, you're lacking this. And she'd say, okay. Well, last year was her most serious year, and even when Cameron came to visit us in January, Holly was doing this thing where she would say, let's go look at school kids. And what that meant was, let's go to the mid-school and park. and watch them, depending what time of day, go into class or come out. And we just park in the parking lot like stalkers, like drug dealers, like child porn solicitors, and watch this row of kids come in and out and discuss their relative, you know, comparative merits and the weight of their backpacks. And, oh, look, she's got a plaid backpack. She must be very brave. Or not have any, you know, I said, or maybe not have any friends in my head. And so but Holly is like, ooh, it's like going to see the Amish or something, you know? let's go visit Taos Pueblo and watch the Indian kids get on the school bus. So Holly's fascinated, and I'm feeling really bad, like we've gone to the zoo and seen the primates. So my feeling about it is not the same as Holly's. So she saw a little boy walking up all by himself, and that's sad for me because I remember the feeling of walking by yourself when other kids are walking in groups of three and four. This one little boy is walking up by himself, and the fashion at Hoover Middle School last year was to wear your backpack real low. So the straps aren't really doing you any good at all, you know, and you're kind of like building up for future whiplash. And so the backpacks are down around their butts. And he must have had science and history homework. Not that Holly could have such a thought. Because really heavy and riding really low. And he was trudging along in that really sad sort of way. And Holly said, he must have taken all his stuff home. That's what she was thinking. And I was thinking, he's sad because it's morning. He has to go to school and he doesn't have any friends to walk with. And so Holly's getting all energized and I'm getting really depressed. It didn't occur to me that when I saw school kids way down the line that I would think each of their stories. I would feel their pain and I would wish that things could be different for their sake. I kind of thought I would just go, yep, there they are and there we're not. But when you park and watch them, it's sad. It just brought back a lot of memories for me. I was also glad that Holly and Kirby and Marty would think those memories were stupid. You know, that they would hear me going like, well, you gotta check some of that stuff out and not keep it forever. I didn't know that my kids would be so happy with clothes from the thrift store. They don't care. They don't know or care who made their tennis shoes. And that's kind of neat. But I don't know. I just didn't know. Kirby apparently doesn't even have any shoes. But you know, they don't balk at a $25 t-shirt with a Smart Aleck saying on the front either. That's fine. But they don't need that all the time. One of Kirby's favorite shirts is a black t-shirt that a friend of ours did kind of like a tie-dye with bleach, like a bleach spatter print so that it's different shades of brown on black. And she did that for him about 4 years ago, and he never wrote a thank you note, and I used to feel guilty about that because she's the kind of person who wants a thank you note. He still wears that shirt, even though the effect of the bleach is that on the edge of some of the lighter things, it's just dissolved. So it's kind of like a scallop design now, kind of like that Vietnam camouflage stuff where it's stamped cut with little circular. Yeah, the shirt is turning into that. He still wears it. So she must know he appreciated it. Because Kirby worked at a gaming shop. They used to, every time he judged a magic tournament or something, they'd give him the staff t-shirt. Every time a new promotion came along for some card game, he'd get a t-shirt. He has to own, I think, 60 t-shirts or so. Most of them in really good shape, and he still wears the ratty American car wash t-shirt that he got at thrift store and that bleached up, tearing apart t-shirt. And that's partly genetic because Keith does that too. But it didn't occur to me that it wasn't going to cost a lot of money to clothe these children. They don't care. Holly was wearing those yellow rain pants. She was thrilled to find those at the thrift store. And I saw them and I said, let's get those for Kirby. And she said, no, I was here first. I'm getting them. I didn't know that little kids could understand Shakespeare. When I was little, if I had tried to or want to watch Shakespeare, somebody would have said, you're not old enough. You know, they would have just told me, made the factual declaration that that wasn't my business, and I wouldn't understand it anyway, so don't bother to try. And each of my kids, there was one particular show that they just kind of stumbled into, wandered onto or something, and they didn't need me sitting there holding their hand and telling them what was going on. They didn't need me asking them to please give it a chance and watch it to the end. Don't give up. And in Holly's case, she was getting in my way. I had set up to watch Twelfth Night and do some sewing, and I invite her little neighbor Kelly over, and it's like, you and Kelly, go play Barbies, do something. They sat down in front of me and watched Twelfth Night. And a couple of times they asked me a question because they were little, 5 and 6, and they go, is that the same person who was that? Yeah. You know, I'd pause it and go, yeah, her brother, you know, shipwrecked. Okay, go ahead. And With Kirby, it was Romeo and Juliet, the new one with the guns, Leonardo DiCaprio and the, you know, all of the guns. And I thought, I couldn't have watched it all the way through because I'm hyper woman. But Kirby did. And I came in after a while and I said, do you want some lunch? Do you want to pause it and watch the stress? He said, no, I'm watching it. And with Marty, it was Othello, just to watch a Lawrence Fishburne movie. And he watched the whole thing. And about a third of the way through, he said, Iago's like a evil genius. And he was all into it. And he said, I want to be Iago. And I said, don't want to be Iago. You know, I'm all moralistic on him. And he goes, shh, it's tactics. You know, he's just into how's he going to pull this off in the time it takes to finish this story. And when Marty stayed with Anne, they went to see The Tempest, a live performance. And, you know, nobody told them too little. Nobody told them it's difficult. Nobody told them this is something people go to grad school to study. They're just, it's like, shh, I'm watching this. And I didn't expect that somebody who could discuss Shakespeare would then turn around and go, where's that Raffian concert video? Because I'm going to put watch that next. I didn't expect this to improve my relationships with my pets, but it did. And not in a kind of, you know, hippy-dippy fairy way, but we just put food down for our dog, and she eats until she's not hungry, and then the food sits there. And sometimes our neighbor dog comes over, who's often locked in the backyard, you know, tied in the backyard, but he's smart and gets out, knows how to use our dog door, comes and eats the food, and that's okay with me. And we have a house sitter, a friend of ours, Sadie, of the famous cloning incident yesterday. And Sadie has a dog, and Sadie feeds her dog separately because they live with another person with a dog. So she takes her dog in the yard, puts the food in the bowl, and says, eat it, hurry, eat it. And we said, well, we don't mind your dog eating Gudrun's food. We'll just put some more down. And she said, really, Gudrun won't mind? No, Gudrun's fine because she knows we'll put some more. And I learned that from my kids. I learned that from knowing that my kids would not eat more than they needed to if they knew there'd be some more later. And it works with the dog, too. And I told her I didn't care if her dog ate the cat food, and that really stunned her. But, you know, Gudrun does. If Gudrun didn't feel like she got enough someday and we didn't have any food that had leftovers for her, she'll just go eat the cat food. And when we've eaten out, if we ate out and there was nothing to bring back for the dog, I'll, like, go through the cat food and put down the turkey instead of the salmon or whatever, you know. I'm planning ahead for the dog to steal it after we go to sleep. And then the really weird thing is trees. And this is a little very hippy-dippy. And I think this is not because of unschooling so much as this is because of the boys not being circumcised and all the reading I did about circumcision. And then knowing that I could have avoided having my gallbladder out if I just drank more cherry juice and, you know, stuff like that. You know, there are ways to get around all this crazy American chopping parts off. And I had my tonsils out when I was a little kid. It's like, oh, it's infected and we don't know what it does. Cut it out. So we didn't have the boys circumcised, and I was able to defend that to Keith's mom, who's a nurse, and said we had to or else dire, vague death stuff. And so now when people say, well, you really ought to prune your trees, I'm thinking, I don't really think I know which of those parts are unnecessary. And I know that in the real world, giraffes or cows or whatever will strip off the bottoms of trees. And we used to have an apple orchard when I was a kid. I lived in a place with 50 trees, 52 counting the weird graft tree and the what are the ones that taste dirty? Pears. Those didn't count. But, you know, they used to say you have to prune your apple trees so the apples will grow. But I think you have to prune the apple trees so you can get the ladder up there so you can steal the apples. I think that's a human interaction thing. But they say, you know, they say if you don't prune the tree, it'll be sick. It's like, how did trees live before people came along and invented pruning shears? So I'm not so sure anymore that I know what trees need. I'm pretty sure I don't. And then I wanted to grow moonflowers, which we have successfully done. And the night before we left, there were 11 at once. Yeah, I'm pretty happy. And so people were saying, well, you have to do this, you have to do that, and you ought to notch the seed. And I'm thinking, okay, seeds are not just a little, you know, clay ball that somebody made. There are parts in there. I've seen diagrams of seeds. So what if I, in circumcision kind of way, notch the good part? And I don't want to be notching anybody's little nuts. That's not good. So I didn't. So I went on the internet and I read to find what the non-circumcision moonflower faction was saying. And they said this: soak them for 24 hours and put them in a Ziploc bag with paper towels. So now I'm thinking, all right, before Ziploc bags, they had to notch them. But now we have technology. So So I soaked these seeds, put them, it's like making sprouts, right? Like it was making sprouts, like alfalfa sprouts. So you put the seeds in there and they sprouted like the next day. And then some of them didn't sprout for 2 or 3 days. But in their own natural way, I guess, I don't think in New Mexico they would ever sprout. But in a wet place, I think it would take them a week. You know, if there was a wet place with natural, like, water on the ground for some reason, I don't understand. So now next year I know. Now next year I soak them and I put them in the Ziploc bag and I put them in the ground. I'm so happy. But that's because of unschooling, because somewhere in there I got the idea that there is something natural, that plants do know how to grow and trees do know how to grow and kids do know how to grow. And maybe they just need some water and to be left alone and maybe a Ziploc bag. I didn't know how much people could learn without reading. That surprised me. I say Kirby was a late reader, but that's because there were grandparents breathing down my neck when you only have one kid. And then when Kirby's older and he's all ta-da and knows tricks and is all smart, then they don't bug me about Holly. But being the first one and all of that, I was like, did you read yet? Did you read? Can you read? Can you read yet? You want me to help you read? And he was the earliest of the three, and partly because I was standing there going, did you read, huh? But it was because of Nintendo. If I had said, you can't have any gaming magazines till you learn to read, he might not still be reading. He'd still be waiting for the gaming magazines. So luckily, we got him the gaming magazines. He was able to read the maps. Actually, it wasn't a magazine. It was a player's guide, the first one. He could read all those maps. It was the Mario game that Marty talked about yesterday where you go down under and the Koopas come and you're in the fire swinging, la la. And it had the whole diagram of all that stuff. It showed where the coins were and the magic little chests and the life up and all that. So Kirby could read the map. And the map had little captions and words, but he didn't care at first, and later on he did, because he could read the numbers, and he could match the word to the word, and pretty soon he's reading just anything he wants to read. But when Holly came along, she wasn't really hanging around with Kirby and Marty, and she read latest of all. She was 11, I think. In that 10 to 11 range, she went from single words to novels. And still, she knew tons of stuff. She could talk about anything. She had a huge vocabulary. She didn't talk like a little kid. She didn't talk about little kid stuff. Unless she wanted to, she sure could. And I didn't know that could happen. Even by the time I had Holly, had Holly, had 11-year-old Holly, I still was just figuring out what a huge amount of stuff you can really know about and you can't read about it. So I think school had a quite carts before horses attitude about that, and I understand why. And Joyce wrote the coolest thing about that, about children as products in school, how you have to teach them to read so you can do the rest of the stuff. And Joyce's explanations, as usual, are clear. And if what I'm saying is not familiar to you, go to sandradodd.com, click on anything that says Joyce, and look for that. I didn't know. We figured it out together. And I found out from Holly that you can, as a non-reader, you can recite poetry and act in plays and learn lyrics and rhyme stuff and play with words and care about the history of English and talk about anything without reading. Who'd have known? I didn't know that life could be slower and calmer and still busier. I didn't know that you could have a really still, quiet life and all kinds of learning going on. I thought the learning was going to happen when we were moving our mouths and driving around. I thought that's what made learning, was being in a new place and talking about it. And sometimes the learning happens when nobody's saying anything. One person's drawing, one person's sleeping, one person's playing a video game, and it's very, very quiet and we're not interacting. I didn't know that. I was a little bit surprised to know how much of unschooling is doing, though, on the other hand, rather than just not doing. So none of that was what I expected, and I was trained open classroom. That's how they taught me that learning worked, is you make this, you put all this interesting stuff out, and you aim them at it, and you say, if you want to do this, and make it so interesting they want to do it. So having that, really, like in word and concept, I got a report card that says I know how to do this, okay, you guys? Still surprised me the way it worked. That the quiet parts are just as good as the noisy parts. And this comes to my big scary point. Okay, sometimes I make a scary point. And the nature of this scary point is within the next 10 minutes, I'm going to say some stuff that I know is going to come back to bite me. Do I have 10 minutes? Because if not, nothing comes back to bite me. I put my watch away. All right. I'm going to say something that I'll have to answer for on a list I'm not even on, I guess. But We're not sitting in the back of the homeschooling world. I kind of thought homeschoolers are out there. They're real public. They're on TV. They're getting interviewed, and their kids are in spelling bees. And we're going to sit in the back and be real quiet. And it turns out we're not. We're not. I mean, yeah, we're small and we're in the corner, but this weekend has proven we're not quiet. I was going to make a prediction about, you know, weather. Who knows? You're all going different places, but I can predict this about everybody's tomorrow. It's going to be real quiet. Even Conti's with seven kids. That van is going to seem like nothing after that museum. So we're doing something. We're doing something really profound and really direct. And I didn't know. Here it comes. I hesitate to say it. I didn't know that I would come to feel like an expert. And I don't mean an expert on homeschooling. I don't mean an expert on my kids. I mean on how children learn. I got a magazine just last week before this. When Paths of Learning went out of business, they replaced the subscriptions. You know, they're filling out the subscriptions with another magazine called Encounter, Education for Meaning and Social Justice. This is as hippie an alternative teacher magazine as you're going to get. And I can't believe how conservative and ignorant the people are who write for it. You know, I was just going to read some. The articles are short, and I thought, well, let's see how it's going in alternative ed, a field that I bailed out of. I'll tell you a story first. There's another field I bailed out of. When I was 15, I started playing guitar, and what I liked to sing was English ballads, any ballads. But as time went on, I started eliminating the American stuff in favor of English stuff. And I started reading about the history of these ballads, and I really liked it. And I went to college. When I was 18, I took a class on English folk music, and I was so into it. And I read everything they had in that library. I started buying books. I started reading journals, you know, folklore journals, which are really pretty dry. But I didn't care, because on the ballad articles, it was like Technicolor, and I was so into this. I didn't know that by the time I was like 24 or 25, and from never really, I mean, I wasn't, except for that one class and reading all this stuff, I wasn't studying it in school. I was studying it at home. I was studying it by the records I bought and the people I talked to, and when I went to England, went to folk clubs, and I'm just like finding. Oh, somebody go around and ask them not to play there, because it's not only loud, but it's dangerous. Kirby, can you talk them out of that corner? Put a chair again. Hey, Kirby, where the flap goes, put a chair on it. So then it came to the point where I would read an article, a new article would come out, and I want to read it. And I would be disappointed sometimes. It's like, that's not right. He didn't read this thing. And it's like, what? They're ignoring all of everything that's been collected in Kentucky and Tennessee. You know, and at that point, I got really frustrated. And then I realized that's the feeling you get when you realize your parents don't know everything. That's the feeling I got when I realized that that politicians, you know, the president wasn't chosen by some kind of impartial contest to find the smartest guy in the country. You know, it's disappointing when you find out that they're just guys who don't know what they're talking about once in a while. So when I got to the point that I could read folklore, research, and report it and know what was good and what wasn't good, then I thought, wow, I've become an expert. And it was kind of creepy, because I thought, I don't want to be able to become an expert that easy. Is that, where are the people who really know a lot? And it was really a little scary and disappointing. But I was in grad school and I dropped out because I broke my leg and got pregnant. But I didn't pursue it, and now I don't know as much. And so that happened with education. So I was big into alternative ed, and I was there, and I was teaching, and then I wandered off, and now I don't know, right? So it passed. I don't know now who's written what. I'm way out of the field. For a while I knew, and then I didn't know. And same with ballads. For a while I really knew I was right there, and now I don't know. So I was reading this magazine. There's an article called Children and Standardized Tests by a teacher in San Francisco. I bet he's really popular. I bet he is 200 people's favorite teacher in their whole life. I bet he's changed a lot of lives. So this is not about him not being a good guy, okay, at all. But he said they were getting ready for standardized tests. He teaches second grade. His wife's also a teacher. And he said he was trying to convince the kids that what was on the test wasn't everything in the world and wasn't all that important. And what he did was he said, let's make a list of the 20 things that you think kids in second grade really ought to know to, you know, survive in the world and be good. And they had just been doing some stuff about the, you know, the 19th century West, and they said, ride a horse. And he said, no, not ride a horse, stuff that second graders need to know. And they said, put ride a horse on the list. And he argued with them not to put ride a horse on the list. And in his own words, the way he described that is, they came up with some things which I initially thought were silly, like it's important to be able to ride a horse. I went along with their ideas as much as they made sense, but at first did not let them include horseback riding. There were two horses last night when we were on our way back from the museum. I mean, people weren't riding them. They were pulling fancy coaches, right, and a buggy ride. But somebody still needs to know about horses. I've just lately been reading about various actors getting jobs, and they were saying, I got the job because I could ride horses. And I watched Camelot a few weeks ago, and Vanessa Redgrave jumps up on a horse. While she's singing, I don't care if they dub the song in later, the woman was singing, she jumps up on a horse, she gets helped up onto a side saddle with a long dress, and while she's on the side saddle with her foot in the upper stirrup, she hops up and hikes her dress back, because, you know, probably is choking her. And she did all that while she's acting, while she's singing, and I went, all right, she can't get that job if she can't hop up with one foot in a side saddle and rearrange her skirt. And I'm not saying all second graders needed to know that when she was a kid, but, you know, that's some things, if you know them, it's going to help you out when you least expect it. So he has the list here, and I'm not going to read it all, but he let them make that item number 21, ride a horse. And of the 20 approved items that the teacher thought really were good things, it has how to ride a scooter. When I was in second grade, we had a horse, but I didn't have a scooter, and if I had had it, wouldn't help. Nobody I knew how to roller skate because there were no sidewalks. I lived in a town with no sidewalks. And some things that other people take for granted, you just don't do. You know, some things require, like, that hard stuff, concrete. That's what it's called. We didn't have it. And he has how to tie my shoes, but I don't think second graders have to know how to tie shoes. Their moms have to know where to find Velcro. And so, I don't know, how to do a magic trick. You don't have to know how to do a magic trick. It's not more important than riding a horse, but it's really cool when you do. But if every second grader knew how to do a magic trick, the rest of them wouldn't be so impressed, would they? Let's keep some of those things rare. And the other article that made me go, oh, huh, was a longer article, much more serious, called A Path Among the Brambles, The Concept of a Lure. And I couldn't stand this one because it was too deep, too self-important. But there's this quote in big letters, and I could read the big letters because I'm a very impatient person. It says, when Joseph Campbell counseled follow your bliss, he was talking about the discipline of fidelity to our allurements. Not that, like hell he was. When Joseph Campbell counseled follow your bliss, he was talking about the discipline of fidelity to our allurements. Now, bliss is like love. You know, if something is there and you're drawn to it and your whole body warms up and your biochemistry changes and you go, I gotta go, I have to be with this thing. That's bliss. Bliss can fade like love can fade. Bliss can go away. Bliss can turn to, I don't want to do that anymore. If you have to have a discipline of fidelity to something, that's not bliss. That's obligation. That's guilt. That's, I have to finish it because I said I was going to finish it. I used to think this was interesting, so now I have to make it my life's work. That's not bliss anymore. Pam said yesterday that they used to decide what to do by whether it was fun. You know, the checkpoint is this fun? And I was not, I was a teenager. I was in my late teens in the crazy hippie days. And, you know, older people used to say with total derision that you can't live your life thinking if it feels good, do it. Like that was the most sinful attitude anybody could have. And I will admit it was misused by some people. But the counter argument, if it doesn't feel at all good, don't do it, does make a lot of sense. You know, you don't want to do everything just because it feels good because you might be hurting some people, but what if what you're doing is hurting you and some other people? Then you need to not do it. So if what used to be your bliss has turned to something you need to have fidelity to out of a discipline, that's not bliss, and that's not something you ought to do. So that reminds me about certificates of empowerment. I usually pass those out when I speak. It's the fourth time this weekend I've spoken. I haven't passed them out, really. I kind of threw some at people the first time. But Keith has some. If you didn't get one, please get one. Because their life is not long enough for you to force yourself to do something that's not fun. that doesn't nurture you. That's killing your soul. So if when you're deciding whether to keep doing something, if you're just doing it because you started it, that's only good if you're going to live 1,000 years and have a 25-year-old body for at least 700 of them. So that's what I feel like an expert about, is in that same ballad way when I can read an article and go, yeah, but they didn't know this. They forgot this. When I read stuff like this by professional educators who are talking about how it is to have a modern, free, joyful education, and they're talking like this, I'm thinking, we are really onto something. We're not just not doing something, we're doing something. Unschoolers have experiences and knowledge that other homeschoolers do not have. It's not just we don't know and do, we know and do something really big and really unique. Unschoolers who start early enough can have relationships with their children for which we don't even have words yet. We can say, well, it's really, and then everybody kind of is fishing for words, it's really peaceful at our, it's really happy at our house. We don't even have a word for what we've come up with here. Unschoolers know things that teachers cannot learn in and around school. If your view of the world has school anywhere between you and the horizon, you can't think how much someone could learn without reading. How would you? And unschoolers have experience. The unschooling kids don't know what experiences they're having sometimes because they have nothing to compare it to. So again, we're still in the middle of it. I don't know what it's going to look like. I'm not going to know what it's going to look like in my lifetime. Somebody, some like Holly's kids might look back and say, oh yeah, my mom was involved in that, and do some kind of retrospective documentation or, you know, a description. But I think, and I hope you have felt some of that in other families over the last few days, of that indescribable sort of thing that we know. When my kids are grown, they'll be experts in some things that other people can't know. If somebody tries to tell Marty or Kirby, under any circumstances, if a kid isn't taught to read, he can't read. They know. It's not they think that a kid can. They know. And it doesn't matter what that other person thinks. He just thinks, because he's never seen it. But they have seen it. They've been it. They are it. Thank you for coming, and thanks for being part of this experience for me, because I see people doing that too, and I really appreciate the sharing that went on all this weekend. I know kids, I have no idea who their parents are. I know parents now, and I know they have kids theoretically. I haven't seen any. It's been wonderful, and thank you all very much. Third time, books, Keith. Bye.
A few more announcements. I want to remind everybody again.